Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Doug Wilbur on the show today. Doug is the CEO of Denim Social, a social media management software company that provides tools to empower marketers in regulated industries to manage organic social media content on one platform. Doug, I'm excited about our conversation today. You and I were connected through our mutual friend, Jack Scatese. Mm-hmm. And Jack said, I think the two of you need to know each other. And after talking to you, I'm like, oh my goodness, you have to come on the show. So thank you so much. I can't wait for our listeners to get to know you and everything that you're doing today, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I'm pumped to be here. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit. You didn't grow up in St. Louis.
I'm not. I'm a transplant. So I grew up in a small town in upstate New York, made my way to college in Pennsylvania. And after graduating from Penn State, I moved to Chicago, where I spent 12 years before relocating down here to St. Louis to be closer to my wife's family.
Well, we're so excited to have you. So I know that what moved you here, and you've already mentioned your wife, you said you guys were working at the same marketing agency.
We were.
And you were good friends. You were cube mates, I think. And then you decide to go back to graduate school. And then you started dating.
It's funny how things work out, right? It's, absence made the heart grow fonder. That's for sure.
Yes, I am sure that's true. Well, you guys were best friends. So tell me a little bit about growing up. I mean, did you have siblings?
I do. So it was just my little brother and I. So he's 5 years younger than I am. We had a pretty tight-knit family. You know, I was very fortunate to have a very large extended family as well. My mom is one of 9 children and my dad's one of 5. So lots of cousins and aunts and uncles and all of that around. That was really beneficial for me growing up to really understand the value of having a good support system. My dad was a businessman. Mom was a teacher. And so they instilled in us very good work ethic and the value of hard work and the value of education really from an early age.
Mm-hmm. What a blessing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, okay. So we've already talked about that you worked in the marketing agency in Chicago. So you went back to get your MBA?
I did. So I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to go back to State College for my MBA. So I'm one of a few folks that, did my undergrad and grad work at the same institution, was invited to come back to Penn State to get my MBA. Phenomenal opportunity to kind of go back to Happy Valley and tramp on the same streets I did as an undergrad. And you looked at it from a much different lens when you were a little bit older, that's for sure. Couldn't speak more highly of the opportunity that I was given to get an education at an institution like that.
Very good. Well, just looking at your LinkedIn profile, I counted at least 15 roles that you have had. In about 12 different organizations.
Yeah, so I don't have a fear of commitment, that's for sure. I've been very fortunate over my career, and especially since I've come here to St. Louis, I got involved with a venture capital firm called 630. The fun fact on the name is that that is the height and the width of the arch. So got involved with 630 really when it was just first getting off the ground. And the idea behind 630 was to capitalize on the robust financial services ecosystem that we have here in St. Louis. So whether or not it's Edward Jones or Wells Fargo, the list goes on and on. And we've got a deep expertise in financial services here in St. Louis. And so the idea behind 630 was to capitalize on that and become a place where that next generation of fintech startups could not only grab a foothold, but also thrive. So I've been very fortunate to have been part of 630 since the very beginning. It's not only as part of as an advisor, but also on the investment committee. Yeah, have been able to give back to the community in many ways and be able to help these folks that are just coming up the learning curve, so to speak, on how to grow a startup, navigate those tough waters.
Gosh, Doug, you have done so many things. But don't you think that all those things that you've done, though, really up to this point have kind of prepared you even for what you're doing today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, even just taking a step back from that is that I've been very fortunate throughout my entire career to have very strong mentors in my ecosystem. And going back to my days at Marketing Works, the agency in Chicago, had great leadership around me, folks that really helped me understand the value of putting the customer first. How do you service a customer in a way that gives them value and makes them feel appreciated? You know, I spent 6 years at Discover Card building products, not selling credit cards, but building new products, right? And targeting new customer groups. And I had great leadership. Many of those individuals are still, you know, friends today that I could call upon at a moment's notice and ask for advice. And so I've been very fortunate to have great mentorship and leaders around me for the vast majority of my career. And the one thing that they always impressed upon me was, look, you got to try stuff. Don't be afraid to stretch yourself. Don't be afraid. You know, I'm a marketing guy by trade, but I've been very fortunate to have been a chief revenue officer, you know, AKA head of sales. I've been the chief financial officer for a company. I've been a product development person. I've had the opportunity to really stretch the boundaries of what I thought was possible with my career. A lot of that has come from just having really good mentors around me who have encouraged me to stretch myself.
That is wonderful. And we could do a whole session just on mentoring, I know. But I think that's why, you know, you've done a lot of things that you've done is you're paying it forward.
Oh, absolutely. And that's quite possibly one of the most fun parts of being involved in an organization like 630, for example, is that I do have that opportunity to give back and to, you have to force yourself to not forget what it was like to be at that stage of growth of, you know, a founder of a startup or of the startup itself, and to not get too far removed from that and to be able to, you know, draw upon the experiences that you had so you can appropriately advise folks.
Very good. Okay. So we're talking a little bit about 630, but we have a pretty robust startup scene here in St.
Totally.
Louis.
I mean, yeah.
With the T-Rex and Cortex and now the NGA headquarters, you've been on both the investor and the entrepreneur lens. I mean, tell us what you think about the St. Louis startup scene.
Sure.
You know, what can we do better? How can we attract more entrepreneurs to St. Louis to start their businesses? What are your thoughts around that?
The building blocks are there from an energy perspective, from a governmental perspective, from an entrepreneurship perspective, from a venture perspective. All of the building blocks are there. I think where we've got to take the next step as St. Louis is to really understand how do we get a little bit more coordinated in those efforts. You know, we've got a lot of well-intentioned activity going on, but I think if we really want to try and take the next step, we've got to get a little bit more organized. If I remember back to, you know, right when I first showed up to St. Louis 7 years ago, coming from Chicago, right? I worked in the loop of Chicago. You walk outside of your office building, you know, it's a packed sidewalk, you know, trying to cram into a restaurant to grab a sandwich for lunch. That wasn't my experience when I first showed up here in St. Louis. It was pretty quiet downtown. And just being part of this community over the last 6 or 7 years now, that's a different experience when you go downtown. You know, Washington Avenue isn't just about an entertainment district anymore. You know, and not to typecast startup founders, but you see a lot of people with branded t-shirts walking around downtown these days, you know, with their company logos emblazoned, right? And so it is working what we're doing. I'm excited to be part of us making that next step and drawing upon, you know, the inspiration of what it took to make New York a startup ecosystem or make San Francisco a startup ecosystem. We've got the building blocks and we just need to take that next step.
It's fun to be part of this ecosystem.
Yeah.
and just to see the change. And I think that we've, like you said, I think we've got all the ingredients. We just have to pull it all together. And I know there's some mergers with organizations and things like that. And Jason Hall at the Elm, which is a good friend of mine, and I know that he's just going to do a great job.
Yeah.
We talked about you being at 630, but let's transition into what you're doing today.
Totally.
And I want you to just share your brilliance. You know, I was thinking as we were talking about St. Louis, I said, maybe we need to do a little bit more social selling.
Yeah.
And I know that's one of your areas of expertise and you have a platform. So talk to us a little bit about the journey from 630 into what you're doing today.
Yeah. So this is, you know, 3.5-4 years ago, was approached by the board of directors at what at the time was called Gremlin Social. And the ask was try and move the company in a new direction. And part of that was we've done a really good job of building a solution for smaller community banks, which we still service today. And that, you know, we love our community bank customers, especially in a day and age with PPP loan rollouts and that we really have seen the value that a community bank can bring to the communities that they serve. But when we looked at the competitive ecosystem, we knew that we also had to build a solution that would scale up and give us more larger customer opportunities, enterprise level opportunities to, you know, pitch a victory for St. Louis, right? And that was really what motivated me to jump in on the opportunity was I saw the bones of something that could be really great. And I saw an opportunity for us to be able to build something that would ultimately bring home a victory for St. Louis from an exit perspective. So took over the helm of Gremlin. We made a couple of acquisitions back in 2018 to shore up some gaps in our technology, which were great. And then it wasn't soon after that that I met a gentleman out of Des Moines, Iowa. His name is Greg Bailey. Greg was previously, you know, a senior level marketing executive in the insurance vertical. He had left his cushy corporate job, sort of like I had left my cushy corporate job, to found a startup called Denim Labs. And as we got to know each other better, we quickly came to the conclusion that our platforms were very complementary. So complementary, in fact, that we should move beyond just being fans of each other and we should actually bring them together, create a new company, which we've called Denim Social. We brought that company together in the height of the first round of the pandemic, so to speak. We announced that merger in May of last year. We also announced that we had taken a round of capital from Herman Companies, which is a local venture capital outfit helmed by Rick Holton here in town, which has been phenomenal. We brought the two platforms together, and really the driving thesis or ethos behind that transaction was that understanding in the financial services arena, ultimately people buy from people, or people bank with people, as we like to say. And what that means is that, you know, we've got wealth advisors and we've got commercial lending operations and mortgage lenders and private bankers. We have all these individuals in our lives that we as consumers lean upon to be able to make more sound financial decisions. And while the former Gremlin was solving that challenge of giving those advisors a better opportunity to connect with those customers, we were doing so from a social publishing perspective and making it easier for them to compliantly engage with customers and prospects on social media. The Denim Labs team was focused on optimizing social advertising at the local level and at the advisor level. And so bringing those two platforms together was really just a unique opportunity, understanding that consumers, the path to purchase is by no means linear in our space. You don't wake up in the morning thinking about, oh man, I need to rebalance my IRA, right? That's not top of mind for most consumers. It's very much life stage driven, very much trigger driven. So, you know, maybe you're expecting another child, maybe you're moving to a new city, maybe you're changing jobs. You know, there's a number of life triggers that would motivate a consumer to make a change. And that's where we believe we've got a unique opportunity to make sure that the advisors that are connected to these consumers have an opportunity to engage with them when the customer is most ready to buy. So that's what we're focused on building at Denim Social.
Yeah. So I want to dig into that more. Something that you had written, you know, 96% of individuals say that they really want their advisors to use technology, but they don't want that at the expense of the human element. It really, truly does need to be both. And boy, are you positioned for such a time as this? What an awesome place you guys are in, because my goodness, with this pandemic, we can't meet face to face.
Correct.
So you also said here, you know, you've got to meet your clients and your prospects where they are, which they're on social.
Gone are the days where you, as a wealth advisor, for example, could go meet someone for a cup of coffee or buy them lunch or, you know, meet them at the branch, right? Like that's not happening right now. And your next best and frankly only option is to meet them where they are, which is on social media. The challenge with a lot of that historically has been a couple of things. One is compliance is a major concern, right? So what happens if one of your bank representatives says something they're not supposed to say on social media and it catches the eye of a regulator? Those are fairly hefty fines that, frankly, make a lot of financial services organizations nervous to think about, right? If, you're letting your advisors loose on social media, what happens if they get dinged by a regulator, right? What's the impact on the brand, both financially and reputationally? So that's one challenge that a lot of them have. The more pressing challenge, I would say, is that many organizations don't know what to say, especially when it comes to what tools do we arm our advisors with to make sure that they are carving out thought leadership opportunities in the marketplace. And so if you think about how we've evolved as a platform over the last handful of years, it's really been a hyper focus on those solving those two issues, is making sure that we have a scalable solution for empowering marketing teams as well as their advisors to be able to always have something fresh and relevant to talk about, but at the same time doing so with the appropriate guardrails so that you don't scare off your compliance department. If you think about where our product roadmap is focused, it's enhancing those two things for our customers.
Very good. Well, we have a lot more to talk about, but we need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Doug. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So, Doug, I want to continue along this same line that we were talking about, because I want our listeners to understand if they're out there and they don't have a strategy for social selling, it is so important. The other thing I do want to mention, congratulations. I read that you guys, Denim Social, was recognized in 2021 as one of the best tech startups in St. Louis.
Well, thank you. We didn't know that news was coming, and we were certainly very pleased when the story came out.
It's wonderful when other people are saying that about you, right? having those third-party validations, I think, are really important. But congratulations on that. That is found in Tech Tribune, I think, I put that out. So very excited and so glad that you met your wife and she brought you back to the roots here in St. Louis. So let's continue on with our conversation about the social selling. So, I know that LinkedIn has stated everybody you meet could be a virtual salesperson for you if they understand how, what it is that you do and your differentiators and that sort of thing. But, we all know people buy from people. They don't buy brands necessarily. They buy from people that they trust and that they have a relationship with. Tell our listeners about what LinkedIn says about that.
By and large, the employees of an organization will have approximately 10x greater following than the brand that they work for. And every time that they post content on social media, they will, on average, get about 2x the engagement than the brand would by posting the exact same content. And if you kind of peel back the onion on that and think about it a little bit, you're like, oh, that does make sense. Because to your point, people buy from people, especially in our target market, which is the financial services arena, and getting back to that whole idea that people bank with people. And so, our view is that a brand's best conduit for driving value on social media is to empower their employees as advocates for the brand. It increases the authenticity of the brand. It strengthens the connections to the community that the FI serves. And ultimately, it gives that salesperson a higher degree of trust by pushing out thought leadership content and having that activity be nurtured by the brand to ensure compliance and reputational risks are appropriately triaged, et cetera. Our firm belief is that social selling does work. It needs to be executed in a coordinated fashion. So making sure that marketing and compliance are all on the same page and that you've got the appropriate monitoring, the appropriate guardrails established, so to speak, right? With things like keyword filtration and approval workflows and archiving of content, et cetera. But at the end of the day, our customers find that by getting organized around social media and specifically around transforming their employees into advocates for the brand is really the best way to drive value on social media.
So what are your favorite platforms? I mean, obviously LinkedIn.
It's been really interesting for our customers. Increasingly, LinkedIn has become a very powerful driver of engagement. Some of it is a testament to, you know, our customer base, right? So whether you're a wealth advisor, you're a commercial lender, you're a mortgage lender who's trying to build deeper relationships with, you know, real estate professionals, et cetera, LinkedIn is really a great place to be able to cultivate those relationships and engage with each other. And ultimately, you know, giving yourself a much greater opportunity to get that referral from somebody that you're connected with, right?
Well, I'm sure that if somebody wants to learn more, you'd be happy to talk to them.
Totally.
That'll be in show notes. And they can reach out to you. Like I said, you've had about 15 roles in your career, everything from investor to entrepreneur to now CEO. If there is an entrepreneur in the making, an entrepreneur in residence that is out there in our listening audience, and if you were them, what are some of the things that you would be doing? How would you start? What's the mindset need to look like?
Venturing off and starting your own thing is not for the faint of heart. It takes a lot of thick skin because 99 times out of 100, you're going to be told no. It's just the nature of the beast. The advice I give a lot of folks that are starting to think about, hey, I want to go start this thing. Be prepared. You're going to have doors slammed in your face a lot. To be ready for that. But at the same time, really think hard about a couple of things. One being, where is the problem? Is the problem large enough? In our world, we call that the total addressable market or the TAM, right? Is the TAM large enough to warrant jumping off the deep end and starting something? Is there an opportunity to come at the problem and solve it from a different direction that's going to give you a competitive advantage? And then the last piece of it is, do you have a personal passion around solving this problem? Not necessarily a financial passion, a personal passion. And in many ways, that's the piece that's hardest. It's a lifestyle that you're signing up for as an entrepreneur. You are going to eat, sleep, breathe this business. And given the fact that it's a very rocky road, do you feel like you care enough about this problem to have the longevity to solve it? And so those are the things that I advise many people on when they're thinking about getting started with their own venture or scaling their startup is, you know, that gut check.
As you were talking, Doug, I got an image of a baby, the care and feeding. I mean, your heart and soul is in there. You can come to a point where you've got revenues that you can hire additional staff and that sort of thing. But boy, the startup, it is not for the faint of heart, for sure.
No, to play on the analogy of the baby, I mean, you also have to recognize when it's time for the baby to leave the nest. And many entrepreneurs and a lot of the value that we provide at 630 and a lot of the personal mentoring and advisement that I do is really built around, okay, you've gotten your startup off the ground. You've shown some preliminary product market fit. You've maybe, you know, landed a handful of customers, but you're probably struggling to scale. And some of that is as a founder. And if you think about in many ways, and it's not a ding against the founder, but in many ways, they're not business people, mm-hmm. right? They're somebody who has that personal passion. They've identified that personal passion. So many ways, surrounding yourself with astute business people who understand how to scale businesses is quite possibly that next most important step in the kind of the maturation of the company.
Could not agree more. Tell me this, 2020.
Yeah.
It's been like something none of us have ever seen before in our life. But it was like I told my grandson yesterday, he was lamenting over something. And I said, Sawyer, for every cloud, there usually are silver linings. And he found his silver lining in his disappointment. But tell me what 2020 taught Doug.
So I think there's a couple of things. I mean, you know, the silver lining piece of it is we were forced to reacclimate around the home front and to get closer as a family unit, right? And so my wife and me and our kids are probably closer now than we ever have. And, you know, we're not being distracted by running around and all of the things that you would do as parents and shuttling people off to sports practices and after school events and birthday parties and all the other things. When then all that went away and we were left with each other, we actually reconnected with each other, right? And my kids are little. So, I mean, it's still highly dependent on me, but, you know, it was nice to have that moment in time where we did hit the reset button on what does it mean to be a family with each other. So that's my silver lining piece of it. You know, I think what 2020 left me was it really challenged me as a leader, kind of getting back to that whole notion of like stretching yourself. I'm very much like a coach mentality when it comes to leadership. I want to be in the ditch, so to speak, with the shovel, with the team, and building things together. And a lot of that would come through with the way that we structured our office environment. We had a very open floor plan. Nobody had an office. We were all sitting at desks together, very much hands-on managerial philosophy. And that all went away. And so for me as a leader, it really forced me to stretch myself to think about how do I motivate my team? And mind you, it wasn't just the team here in St. Louis. We had brought the Denham Labs guys into the fold. That team is based in Des Moines. We also had some people who were working remotely in other parts of the country. How do you motivate a team? And how do you keep the trains running on time, so to speak, when you're not all in the same place together? And that was a significant challenge for me, admittedly. And it was an exhausting challenge, but I think it was a necessary for me to grow my capabilities as a leader, is to, you know, have that challenge put in front of me. So I'm thankful for 2020. It's been a rough road and certainly wouldn't wish it upon us again, collectively as a society. But I mean, if in many ways I've come out as a stronger husband, father, CEO than I was, you know, at the end of 2019.
Very good. Doug, this is Something Extra. And I have to ask you, what is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
It kind of gets back to this whole idea of having really good mentors around you. And one of the things that they impressed upon me was this notion of intellectual curiosity. And that something extra for me as a leader has always been just asking that one more why. Really the why, and digging a little bit deeper, not presuming you know the answer, but really always having that intellectual curiosity as to why. That's the number one kind of something extra for me in my career has always been like, ask that one last question.
Yeah. And I am thinking that can take multiple forms. So you can say, why do we need to do it that way? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it can take multiple forms that
yeah, and you know, you think about it from a customer perspective, right? We're a very customer first organization. And so for us, you know, it's, well, why is the customer asking us to do that? Why are they asking us to build that feature, for example, and not either just dismissing it or doing it because they said to, but like really asking why? What's that intellectual curiosity? And how can we ask that one more question that gives us the insight that we need?
Yeah. And that's the key, right? Mm-hmm. The insight that we need so that we can make the right decisions. Yep. Wonderful. Well, Doug, is there anything that you want to talk about that you want our listeners to know about that we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, sure. No, this has been great. I've really enjoyed the time together. And certainly if, you know, you are a listener and you work in the financial services arena, you know, without being too much of a sales pitch, we'd love to talk to you. We think we've got a lot of opportunity to help folks within the financial services arena to be able to harness that collective horsepower of their employees' reach on social. And if you're curious to learn more, hit me up.
Very good. Well, Doug, thanks again. Thanks for being here. Mm-hmm. I loved our conversation, and I know that our listeners will as well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.